Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrn Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed.
Thanks to functional MRI studies, researchers are getting a better handle on why childhood memories often are so unreliable. The biological reason for this is because we are producing new neurons at an accelerated rate. And at the same time as we're producing them, we're also breaking them down as we build and tear down new neurocircuitry. Naturally, when I read about this, I had to think in terms of what this means about our memories relative to any childhood pets we might have had, and specifically our dogs. For example, I might have a vivid memory of sitting in an open area with my squirming dog, trying to pull burrs out of her, sweating profusely, getting bitten alive by mosquitoes while I accomplished this wretched deed, with my dog not liking it any more than I did. But I had to do it. I knew I couldn't take that dog home with burrs in her ears or anywhere else in her body or any other evidence that might suggest that the two of us had been in that field after my mom told me not to take the dog there. Did this really happen? I doubt it, because there weren't any big fields around our home when I was growing up, and the large open spaces were mostly grassed areas that were routinely mowed. But for the longest time, I considered that a vivid memory and one of my favorite memories of childhood. But sometimes our memories of our childhood pets can get us into problems. One example of this are memories of dogs as our protectors. Dogs who shielded us from all harm and danger in body, mind, and spirit. We vividly remember them protecting us from what in our minds we see as vicious neighborhood dogs or wild animals. In the worst case scenarios, they protect us from dangerous people. In the very, very worst case scenario, they function as a shield between us and painful memories of growing up. On the one hand, when we're young children, such images comfort us. Whether the dog actually does anything like this, or whether the dog does something that in our little minds we might construe as being an incredibly heroic act, which is deeply embedded. Most of us, as we mature, we recognize that some of those memories are false on our own. Just as I look back to the area I grew up in and realized there wasn't any big meadow there, other people realize that huge, vicious pit bull next door was actually a teacup poodle. But other people aren't so lucky. Because they went through other traumatic events during their childhood that they were unable to move beyond, they bring the image of the dog as their protector with them. Under those circumstances, they naturally want to project that same image on any successive dogs they get. But it's hard for real dogs to compete with fantasy dogs, because fantasy dogs live in a different world. It's hard for real dogs to behave in ways that fantasy dogs do, because they are, after all, real dogs. But the largest burden that any canine protective fantasies impose on future dogs is that we may be asking them to do something they are incapable of doing. Although we don't like the behavioral problems that arise when we do this, the inner dog aggression, the human aggression, the destructive behavior, the separation anxiety. On the other hand, we don't want to accept the protective role and relieve them from that burden. At the end of the day, that's what these fantasy dogs enabled us to do. They enabled us to remain in a childlike state where we could cede all of our responsibilities to the dog. And the dog would assume these gladly and accomplish these heroically without any consequence for the dog or ourselves. These cases are a good example of be careful what you wish for. Because in the process of successfully imposing this type of image on a dog, we wind up suspending ourselves in a childlike state. And unfortunately, as a fair number of people who do this discover, that can be doggone depressing.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore, by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Katova Arts, www.katova.com.